Wrestle Radio Australia is a proud member of the FNX Network. You can find this show and many more at fnx.network. That's the new URL, fnx.network. This episode is dedicated to the memory of Dusty Rhodes.
This is Jay Hunter from OSW Review.
This is Brian Alvarez, and you are listening to Wrestle Radio Australia.
This is the voice of explosive pro wrestling, me, Dee Olsen.
Hey, this is the king of the mountain, Jeff Jarrett.
This is Robbie Eagles.
This is the loosest in Australian wrestling, Adam Brooks.
This is five times the world heavyweight champion, the Scrap Daddy himself, Scrap Brian Adam Pearce, and you are locked in to Wrestle Radio Australia.
Hey, it's Killian in English.
Here's where the action is. Here's where the action is.
Welcome to the show, folks. Thank you very much for checking it out. My name is Josh Armour. This is Wrestle Radio Australia. Back after a little hiatus there for a couple of weeks. Sometimes life gets in the way, even in the way of pro wrestling and podcasting. But we are back with a vengeance. And this week's guest is a star of OVW Wrestling in America. Yes, Ohio Valley Wrestling. He is part of the Global Force Wrestling organization, Muhammad Ali Vaez. He is a top bloke. Got to spend some time with him down here in RCW. And let me just put it this way, folks. Anybody that interrupts a 10-bell salute to the great Dusty Rhodes, probably going to draw a bit of heat. And this man definitely did that down here at RCW over the weekend. The fella is, I'll tell you what, talented guy and full of knowledge. So this is not only going to be a great episode for the fans of Outback Championship Wrestling and the fans of Muhammad Ali Vaez, but also the workers out there, the wrestlers out there, plugging away at the indie level and, you know, trying to make bigger and better things of themselves, hopefully make a living at pro wrestling. Muhammad Ali Vaez is definitely a man that you want to listen to and take in his words of wisdom. So I will be back right after this with Muhammad Ali Vaez here on Wrestle Radio Australia. Thanks for joining us.
Hey everyone, I'm Todd Eastman, and every fortnight the Big Ballers and I bring you the Big Ballers Podcast, where we talk NBA news, trades, and anything else related to basketball. We're insightful.
Lance Stephenson, he's going to be an all-star this season.
Serious.
I've got a certain spot to fill, but Miller usually fills it with the D.
Sounds pretty fluent to me.
Nah, that's mean edited.
Professional.
Harrison Barnes. Dude, follow me again. You don't need to unfollow me. I'm sorry for whatever I did.
And most of all, welcoming to new fans.
Anyone that is not a basketball fan, that is all of a sudden a basketball fan looking for a team, this is what I say to you. We don't want you.
You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, fnx.network, or anywhere you can listen to podcasts. That's the Big Ballers Podcast. Like sitting next to a bunch of guys in the pub who think they know about ball.
Alrighty, we are here for a bit of an impromptu podcast. I was hoping to catch up with this man later on today, but we've said, nah, bugger it, we've got time. So we're going to have a chat now with OCW Australia star, wrestled in OVW, little stint in ROH. I'm sure we will talk about that with Muhammad Ali Vaez. Thanks for having a chat with me, dude.
Oh, thank you, Josh. It's my pleasure to be here, and it's my pleasure to take part in your show.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, thanks for checking out the show a couple of weeks ago. Sort of, you said, hit us up with a link, and to know that you actually enjoy the show, that means a lot coming from somebody who's been in the business, you know, for a while as well, that they actually enjoy, I guess, the chats that we put out.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, man. I am a connoisseur of all things wrestling. So anybody that shares the passion that I have for this business and this art form, you know, I have something in common with. So I like to see everything and I like to hear everything that has to do with the business that I've chosen to make a living in.
And when did it all start for you as far as watching wrestling, getting drawn in by the art form?
Oh, well, as a child, I was enamored with WWE programming, then known as WWF. Saturday mornings, I'd get up and watch the cartoons, and then Superstars would come on shortly thereafter.
So you grew up with it in the 80s?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I'm a child of the 80s, so I grew up watching Hulk Hogan, Ultimate Warrior, Ravishing Rick Rude, King Kong Bundy. Those were the guys that entertained me on Saturday mornings.
Because, I mean, out here, and it's been well documented on this show, that our exposure mainly to WWF and whatnot came from the VHS tapes months later and whatnot, and we'd be lucky if we saw it on TV. What was it like in the 80s? Was it, I guess, the pop culture boom that we're sort of told about these days?
Well, again, at the time, I was a 9 or 10 year old child, so I wasn't necessarily concerned with what was cool in pop culture. But I do remember you would see a lot of cross branding. This was around the time that WWF did the partnership with MTV, so the rock and roll and wrestling connection. And I would see guys like Coco Beware and Captain Lou Albano on MTV programming as well. So it just further, I guess, interested, well, I guess it further fostered my interest in wrestling because I was seeing it on other platforms. Now, as a kid, I wasn't smart enough or intelligent enough to analyze it that way. I guess I'm looking backwards and saying, yeah, I guess their multi-platform approach worked because they made a mark out of me, that's for sure.
Did you think at that age, like, yeah, that sort of early age, there's a chance that I can do this one day, or was it just sort of a fantasy until years later and you came across a trainer? How did you get involved in the business?
Well, as a kid, I kind of lost my way with the business as I started to get into high school and started playing sports, and I stopped following wrestling. I grew up in a household that didn't have cable television, so it's not that it was extremely accessible. With the rabbit ears, we'd get the Saturday morning shows, but as I got into high school, TV watching was not something that I did very often. I preferred to listen to 80s music like what we're hearing in the background right now. But nonetheless, I went to a military school for college, West Point. And I went there when I was 18 years old. And in that environment, we really didn't have anything to do except study, shine shoes, do military drills. And when I was about a junior in college, we got the privilege of going to the officers club and drinking beer and watching a big screen TV. And this was on Thursday nights, and at that time SmackDown was being shown on the big screen on Thursday nights. So I started watching the product, and this was around the time that Triple H and Mick Foley were in their feud. So I remember distinctly watching the Mick Foley character transform into the Cactus Jack character. And I was so struck. Now, again, I'm 20, 21 years old at this time. I was so struck with the character development that I was seeing unfolding. Even though I didn't know what character development was, it was still compelling television to me. I also remember seeing, within that time frame, an intercontinental title change on television. And that was unheard of when I was a kid. When I was a kid, it was all squash matches. It was Hulk Hogan's in the ring, and here comes some guy you've never heard of or will never see again. 3-minute squash match, big boot, leg drop, 1, 2, 3, Hulk Hogan's the man. So to see how the product had evolved in the 10-plus years since I had fallen out of touch with it, it hooked me right back in. So I became an avid fan. West Point is roughly 45-minute drive from Madison Square Garden. So it gave me the opportunity to go to a lot of live events then, too. Because back then, and they may still be doing this, I don't know, but WWE was running Madison Square Garden house shows 5-6 times a year.
They don't do them as often these days as they used to, that's for sure.
Well, Madison Square Garden, if you've never been, is a very decrepit old building. So I can and it's very expensive. So I can understand why they may not be doing it now. But back then, it was amazing because it made the show accessible to me. And it was also down the block from WWE New York, or WWF New York, I think, their little restaurant endeavor that they did for a while.
One of many failed endeavors on the part of Vincent K, yeah.
Well, you charge $30 for a hamburger, it's you know, that's what happens. Even if Sunday Night Heat's playing on the big screen, it's still I didn't go back after that one time.
Well, but we in Australia, we had a similar the themed restaurant sort of caper in Melbourne. There was, oh geez, this would have been 15 odd years ago, at least 20 years ago maybe even. There was Planet Hollywood and the All Star Cafe that was a big sort of venture. It started in the States and then it came here, and it didn't really last. And I think that was mainly because of that Australian sort of sensibility of, well, I hope I bloody get what I'm paying for, and I guess people didn't, and so that's why that sort of fell through. But
I would imagine that if you're going to a place like that, you want to get a little bit of a rub from the star power. So if I'm going to Planet Hollywood and there's a chance Sylvester Stallone or Arnold Schwarzenegger is going to walk in the door, maybe then I'm more inclined to pay the ridiculous price that they sell food for. But in Australia, how often is that really going to happen? It's not. And if it's going to happen, you're going to know about it in advance because they're going to publicize it. So I'm just purely speculating here. But I'm guessing the overhead costs of running a place like that were so high that they had to put exorbitant prices on the food, and then business 101. You're not going to last.
I mean, even at Planet Hollywood in Melbourne, if we got a Dado brother, I would have been happy with that. I don't know if you're familiar with the Dado dynasty, but
I am ignorant to the Dados.
That's a whole other podcast, one for the Get This fans out there. And so getting into the business, when did that, like, yeah, sort of just started training and that sort of thing?
Well, I realized back when I was watching this during my college years that if I ever had the opportunity to do this, I was going to try it. But realistically, who becomes a professional wrestler? It's not like it's the average career path your high school guidance counselor tells you about. So I left West Point in 2001. I went to Eastern Kentucky University. I got a master's degree. And while I was doing my academic pursuits, I had a chance encounter with a guy at a bookstore when I was buying an autobiography of some wrestler. I think it was Roddy Piper's. And the guy was like, hey, are you a wrestling fan? And I said, yeah, of course. I'm buying this book.
And you're just a very big John Carpenter fan. You needed the backstory on They Live.
Absolutely. That's what it was. I was looking for the inside scoop. So this gentleman proceeded to tell me that he himself was, in fact, a professional wrestler. Now, I'm looking at this guy, and he was maybe 5'6", 130 pounds. Didn't look like he'd ever lifted a weight in his life. So I'm thinking to myself, and back then I was, you know, same height I am now, but I was about 220 pounds, significantly larger than I am now. The benefit of being 23 years old. I'm looking at this guy and I'm saying, if this guy can wrestle, maybe I can too. So he told me where he was having shows, and I went and I checked it out, and it was a small federation in Lawrenceburg, Kentucky. No frills, no nothing. It was just a basic ring and a building, and it was one of those old school atmospheres where you had 28 people in the crowd, 26 of them were smoking in the building, poor lighting, asbestos on the ceiling. The locker room was about the size of my car, just very cramped conditions. And I paid, I think it was $800 for lessons. And I promptly got 4 lessons, and then the guy left town. Never heard from him again. So it was quite the introduction into professional wrestling.
Now, did that, I guess that's that sort of, the carny mentality that is about the place, unfortunately, in pro wrestling, in the independent circuit, and those upstart sort of trainers. Now, did that put you off? Did you sort of think, oh geez, is the rest of the business like this? Like,
no. And let me preface that by saying you're gonna find carny in any aspect of life. I'm trying to buy a car. I'm buying a car right now in Melbourne, and I'm dealing with carny car salesmen who can't take a bump. So it's carniness is a human trait, unfortunately. But it was kind of a red flag for the organization itself, not so much for the wrestling business. I ended up showing up for that fifth class, and this was in 2004. I showed up for that fifth class. No class today, but we have a show tonight. So they threw me into a battle royal. Now, I was not prepared. Didn't know what I was doing. I learned how to take a flat back bump and a face bump and a headlock takeover. Just very fundamental basics. But I was if I may say so myself, I was a young, good-looking 24-year-old kid. I had a body, so I understand why they said, hey, let's put this kid out there. So I did this battle royal. It was a complete cluster F-U-C, you know the rest. And I remember getting thrown over the top rope and distinctly remember my face smacking the concrete floor and seeing stars. My first concussion in wrestling. So after that, this time period, I had maybe 6 more months left on my master's degree. So I said, you know, I'm gonna take a step back and I'm going to finish my degree and then I'm going to pursue wrestling again. So I did that. I ended up moving to Louisville, Kentucky, which is about 150 miles from my hometown. And I moved to Louisville because at that time, WWE's developmental center was Ohio Valley Wrestling. Yeah. So I moved to Louisville with the goal of going and enrolling in their school. And that's exactly what I did.
Was Danny Davis the head trainer or the sort of the head of the organization at that point, or was Jim Cornette still there?
No, at this point, Danny was always the man there, but he's the owner. And I actually didn't have a conversation with Danny until I'd been working there for 2 years. He was very much the man behind the curtain and the guy who you didn't talk to unless you were a top guy or unless you screwed up somehow. So I didn't have a lot of interaction with Danny at first, but there was two, was there basically three divisions of talent at OVW. There was about 50 guys that were under WWE developmental contracts that WWE was paying to be there. Their primary, and that's who the television roster comprised of. And their trainers were at that time Al Snow and Robert Gibson of Rock and Roll Express fame. Then there was the intermediate class, which was open by invitation only to everybody that was a part of the system that either WWE had an interest in eventually giving a developmental contract to, or people like myself that had come on their own dime and had enrolled in the school and had progressed to that level. And that class was taught by Hustler Rip Rogers, who is one of the greatest trainers in the wrestling business. And then the beginner's class was taught by Nick Densmore, but he, fortunately for him, he got picked up for the Eugene character literally right as I had gotten to OVW. So because I had some half-assed training before and because Densmore wasn't in the program anymore because he was on the road with WWE, I was able to bypass the beginner's class and went straight into Rip Rogers' intermediate class. I spent about a year and a half. Now, at this time, let me back up. I spent about a year and a half in Rip's class exclusively. At this time, I still had a 9-to-5 job. I was a mortgage banker. So I would come on, we had trainings on Monday evenings and Saturday mornings, and then OVW taped television on Wednesday nights. So I would show up for TV wearing my expensive suit and my, you know, overcoat and driving my nice car because of the life that I had built for myself outside of wrestling. Which obviously made me stick out like a sore thumb. I didn't realize it then.
But the other guys rocking up in, you know, in their old Fords and with their, you know, with their scraggly old gym bag, and here you are like just pimping it on the way to the venue.
Yeah, yeah. Trust me, once I made wrestling my full-time career, that car and that wardrobe quickly went away.
Yeah.
I had been there, and in OVW at that time, you did not go in the locker room unless you were on the show. So I spent the first year as a student at OVW sitting in the crowd in the same seat with my tag team partner watching the show. And this was when like a 19-year-old Cody Rhodes had just gotten to developmental, or like I'm trying to think who's on TV now. Dolph Ziggler was still there. Mike Mondo. The who's who of guys that have come from OVW in the last 10 years. Rob Conway, Sylvain Grenier, Rene Dupree.
I need to step in there. Mike Mondo is one of my favorite wrestlers, and it's honestly a shame that he hasn't gone further. Can you tell us a bit about being around and working with Mikey?
Absolutely. Actually, Mike Mondo is one of my best friends in the world, and he is doing very good in life right now. So even though you don't see him on wrestling shows, understand that he's in a great place in his life right now. But Mondo actually lived with me for 2 years. Yes. Not that kind of arrangement. No, strictly platonic.
The stories living with Mike Mondo, I can imagine, would be fun.
Well, if we fast forward a couple years from where I just left off on the story, a couple of us from OVW, Mondo included, got an opportunity to go to China and wrestle full time. And this promoter, who I will not publicize his name right now, but he's an asshole, just to put it like that. He had told us that, you know, oh, yeah, quit your jobs. You can let your home lease run out. You know, no problem. We're leaving on December 18th and, you know, blah, 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 blah. So Mondo listened to him, didn't renew his lease on his apartment, put everything he owned in storage, and then come to find out, oh, there's no plane tickets. Oh, we're not going anywhere. Mondo's screwed. Now, I owned a house in Louisville. I still own a house in Louisville. And because of that, it kind of turned into a wrestling hostel for 10 years. But I was in a position where Mondo was a guy whose work is impeccable. He has a brain for pro wrestling. And he's a super nice human being, too. So he was the one that got me on this China tour that went nowhere. So, you know, being like a good human being, I believe in karma, and I knew Mondo was a friend and needed a place to stay. I said, hey, man, you want to? I have a 2,000 square foot house, and it's just me and my cat. You want to come stay with me? So he came, and he lived with me for about two and a half years until he moved back to New York. This was after his time in Ring of Honor when we eventually moved. But, yeah, Mondo is – listen, he is the kind of guy – who is so focused. His body was phenomenal back then. And I can attest, he helped me bring my body along to where it needed to be. But this guy would literally eat chicken and broccoli every 2 hours on the clock. And when he wasn't preparing his chicken and broccoli, he was sitting in front of a laptop watching wrestling. And it didn't matter who it was, when it was from, where it was from. This guy was a sponge. And he is the first guy that ever pushed me. Meaning Danny Davis would give us 28 minutes on television. And Mondo would teach me how to work a pay-per-view quality match on television. False finishes, opening and closing stories, all that 9 yards. So Mike Mondo had a huge, albeit indirect, but huge influence on the talent that I became. And subsequently, my philosophies on coaching other talents. Yeah. Tremendously came from Mike Mondo. I can't say enough good things about him.
One, I mean, that's one thing that you mentioned there about how he would just watch so much wrestling and take it all in. I remember when, you know, I did a bit of in-ring training, you know, it would have been about 5-6 years ago now, geez. And, you know, back then, well, I guess sometimes when you first get into wrestling, people look at you like, oh, God, you're a mark if you watch too much wrestling and rah, rah. These days, I'm noticing, though, that because of, I guess, the stories and the experience that's, you know, shared by folks like you and you know, what you learned from Mikey is that really, I mean, if you're going to be an actor, you're going to sit there and you're going to watch the best actors yeah. in their best roles to pick up how they convey and deliver such an emotion or they get their character and the story over. And wrestling really is no different. I mean, I, as an announcer and a commentator, I pay more attention to the commentary and the announcing than anything else. Yes. And I find that it just, it helps. Some nights you have off nights and you think, oh, geez, I was going to do this or not do this and I ended up doing it or not doing it. But you, by watching and listening to the best, you definitely do learn more and you feel more confident within yourself if you pick up on something that you can emulate and that works for you as well. And that's definitely not a bad thing is watching too much wrestling if you are in wrestling.
Absolutely. But I think the context is important because, for instance, here's a bad analogy, but if you watch a bunch of Jake the Snake Roberts DVDs or old tape, and then you put a snake on and you go out there and you talk like Jake did and you just rip him off, well, then you're an idiot.
Exactly.
But if you can watch all forms of wrestling and reverse engineer why certain things were done at the time that they were done, then it is an invaluable tool. We're not recreating the wheel here. Nothing in wrestling at this point, well, not necessarily nothing, but most of what you see today is not original. It's a recast with new characters in old stories that have stood the test of time throughout human history. It's not just wrestling. Make sense? So if you watch Monday Night Raw to see, I don't know, Kevin Owens is on top right now. You watch Monday Night Raw to see Kevin Owens, and then you think it's okay to put on a black t-shirt and go out there and do what you see Kevin Owens doing on Raw, then that's absolutely ridiculous. Instead, pay more attention to how Cena and Owens are telling their story. Why are they doing what they're doing when they're doing it? Did it get over? Now, how do I translate that to what I do? Does that make sense?
Totally.
In that context, I think watching tape is one of the most valuable things you can do. Now, that's watching tape of other people. Me, myself, I watch myself a lot. Now, let me back up. I'm not enamored with myself. But Lil Wayne, who's one of my favorite rappers of all time, made this statement once that he doesn't listen to any other rap except himself. And the reason why is because every time he listens to his own art, he picks up on things that he could have done better, or that he could have tweaked, or that could have made his artistic expression better. And I do the same thing when I watch myself. I pay attention to my footwork. I pay attention to, why did I do that there? That led to nowhere. I like to, in painting the canvas of a professional wrestling match, I like to do everything to where it pays off later in that match. It's storytelling. For instance, if I hit somebody with a back suplex at the end of that match, or at some point in the future in that match, I'm going to go for that same back suplex and the babyface is going to reverse it. It's understanding and tightening up your game so much so that there's no wasted motion. Make sense? So in that context, yeah, I definitely watch myself a lot, but I'm more interested in body language, facial expressions. How did my feet move? Am I telling a coherent story? So watching other people and watching tapes of the legends that have made a living in this business is almost as important as self-reflection of what you do yourself as a performer, if that makes sense.
Yeah, totally. Totally. I'm just going to quickly have a look-see on the social medias here. Of course, if you want to, we're doing this very late notice. I've actually put the call out for questions and feedback about 2 minutes before we started chatting. So we've got one here from Ian Davis. Obviously, this will be released after your match tonight. But thoughts on facing Riot City Wrestling's Grimm, the resident monster, and also welcome to the streets of Riot City. It's Ian's birthday today, and he will be here with the 7MB in full force. I know that much.
Well, happy birthday, Ian. For your birthday tonight, I'll gladly smack you around if you want to step up to the plate.
But, oh, please.
Listen, I am super excited about facing Matt Basso. I had the privilege of doing commentary for OCW's television episodes, OCW in Melbourne, a few weeks ago, and I watched Basso versus a young kid named Sid Parker, and they blew me away. Matt Basso is a very talented performer. He's also a very large man. So in my mind, if I can take a guy down who's almost a foot taller than me, then that just makes me look more of a, more like a force to be reckoned with. So I welcome the challenge, and I can't wait to tear it up tonight in Adelaide with him.
It's going to be fun to see you do your thing. And also Michael Roach, one of our good mates, who sure will be here tonight. He's also actually asked the exact same question, thoughts on wrestling Grimm. So the residents of Riot City are fired up and they're ready.
Because it's not his birthday, I'm not going to offer him the same privilege of getting slapped in the face by me. But if he wants to pay $5 at the merchandise table, I'll gladly give him a slap.
There you go, Mike. The challenge has been laid down. And you at the moment are working for, on behalf of, I don't know if you actually wanted to talk about it publicly, but working for, on behalf of Global Force Wrestling, and sort of, I guess, scouting and looking at the talent down here in Australia. Global Force Wrestling, I know that not a lot can be said at the moment about the future plans. It's slowly being rolled out, which I think is a clever move on the part of the office. There's an event happening today in the States. What can you tell us, though, about Global Force and the vision? We've had Jeff Jarrett on earlier in the year. He spoke to Todd Eastman and spoke a little bit about GFW. But as far as your role and sort of what you're looking for as well, can you tell us about that?
Absolutely. My primary mission here is to go everywhere. Anywhere that there's wrestling and anywhere that there's professional wrestlers in Australia, I want to go. And I want to see who has the potential here to perform on a global stage. Now, that may not mean today, that may mean tomorrow, but I'm trying to see who is who on this continent as far as the business of professional wrestling. My specific job is to go to these shows, identify talent that I see potential in. Now, that may mean that they have a body, that may mean that they have great work, that may mean that they have an excellent promo, that may mean that, you know, we're looking for, as an example, a 6'3" Aboriginal with three heads. Well, if I find that individual, and then I'm going to put him on camera. But my whole job here is to create talent profiles of as many talents as possible to send to the office in Nashville. Jeff and I do Skype conference calls about once a week, and we basically talk about talent that I've seen here that are worth his attention. If they're not worth his attention today, they are in the future. And there's quite a few in Melbourne. At this point, Adelaide is the first city I've come to now that I've been living here for about 6 weeks. But I've attended almost every organization's shows in Melbourne multiple times. And there is about 12 guys across all these different companies that I'm salivating at the opportunity to put them in front of Jeff because I think they are that good. So, long story short, Global Force Wrestling is an entity that plans on bringing wrestling back to the forefront. Now, there's been a lot of speculation about a TV deal and when is this new information going to be rolled out and when's the roster going to be shown, and all that will come in due time. But Jeff feels very strongly, as does the office of Global Force Wrestling, that the days of a wrestling company living and dying by a television deal are far from over. If you have a television show on, let's say, I don't know, ABC, just as a bad example, for instance, at 8 p.m. on Thursdays, you're not only competing against every other channel that's running programming at 8 p.m. You're running up against shows like Game of Thrones and Orange is the New Black. You know, professional quality dramas with millions of dollars behind them.
And also now you're competing against Netflix, against Hulu. You're not just competing against television. I mean, most of the programming that we watch in our household, me and my wife and the cats, it's Netflix. At least 50% of the time, and I know for me, at least 20% of the rest of the time is WWE Network. So
yes,
yeah.
So the days of cable being the king are over, and you literally took the words out of my mouth. There are platforms now like Netflix, Hulu, the WWE Network, for instance, that show that online streaming video on demand is the wave of the future. So I would suspect, and if I were in Las Vegas today, I would put a bet on the fact that Global Force Wrestling will have a footprint in these markets going forward. You cannot live and die based on a television network's support. TNA is going through that right now. WCW went through that 15 years ago. And ultimately, it took Ted Turner, who was a huge supporter of WCW from his days in the 70s, once he was removed and Time Warner, the publicly traded corporation, was calling the shots, they dropped wrestling as soon as they could. So when you have people outside of the wrestling business trying to control a wrestling product that they don't understand and they underestimate as an art form, you're doomed for failure. You cannot build a business model like that. Now, the exception to that is Vince McMahon, but look what he's done. And look how he revolutionized the business in 30 years. If you're not Vince McMahon, it's going to be very hard to find that kind of platform. Now, that's not to say that Global Force Wrestling isn't talking to networks in the United States. They have quite a few producers, namely Mark Burnett, who is the man behind several shows like Survivor and another one that's, I don't watch reality TV, so it's kind of.
Lucha Underground has been involved with.
Lucha Underground, again, and they're not on a traditional network. They're on a niche network for a Spanish-speaking audience, and look at how good they're doing. Now, I heard that episodes, or the season, cost around $750,000 to produce.
That's cheap.
That is cheap, but for your mom-and-pop wrestling organization, that is impossible.
Yeah.
But look at Netflix as an example. Look at how many original shows are coming out on Netflix. Even not even original. I'm a huge fan of the show Arrested Development. It was one of my favorite TV shows back in the day. Netflix resurrected that franchise and paid for the fourth and fifth seasons. So the days where you have Spike TV or MTV or any of these television networks as your primary sponsor are over. There are new players in the games, namely Netflix, Hulu, and any other ones that I'm forgetting to mention at this point. So, needless to say, all of that stuff is in the capable hands of Jeff. I am not necessarily privy, nor do I ask in-depth questions about this. All I know is that my job is to find everybody in Australia who is a wrestler, identify those that have potential to be on global television today or tomorrow, and to let the office know about that. And in the process, I also am trying to foster relationships with the promoters around the country because, as you know, Global Force Wrestling has several affiliate promotions around the continent in strategic locations. Melbourne, Sydney, Adelaide, where I am here today, Perth, and then Auckland, New Zealand as well. So if I can go to, for instance, Tasmania, and I find an operation there that is truly, number one, they're good human beings. Number two, they respect the art form and business of what we do. And number three, there's a potential for us to combine forces and for everybody to benefit, then those promotions are going to go in my list to the office as well. So it's really a tremendous opportunity because Australia, by nature of its isolation from the rest of the world, doesn't get these type of opportunities often. If that makes sense. And I'm here in large part to try to present those opportunities. As a global company, we need representatives from everywhere. Now, I'm not Australian. I'm Persian and American. So just because I'm on the roster doesn't mean that I fulfill the Australian quota. That's not true. I need to find guys like, for instance, Adam Brooks, as a talent who stands out to me as somebody who could be a serious player in the international stage in 5 years. Not to say that he's not ready today, but everybody can benefit from traveling the world and learning and honing your craft. He's the type of talent that I see that I red flag to the office immediately, and I say, this is a guy you need to keep an eye on. In the meantime, I'm going to teach him what I learned from my coaches in WWE and TNA developmental, and the fact that I've worked television, over 400 episodes of wrestling television, so I know how to work in front of a hard camera. I know what the boom mic is. I know all these little things that if your wrestling career consists of working spot shows or non-televised events, you're not going to know.
Because it's a completely different game doing the shows that, for instance, here at Riot City Wrestling, we do in front of 200-300 people. You know, they go on Vimeo, DVD, whatnot, but we're not living and dying by the presentation of that show, that if we have a bad show, that could, you know, lead us down a bad path. You know, whereas television, it's a completely different thing. You need to be on. You need to be on. Yes. And it helps when, you know, folks like yourself, Adam Pearce, who's been down here a couple of times, he's been on the show. He's not just an amazing guy, but the little nuggets of information that he can just feed you are incredible. And one little thing he'll say and you go, I never thought about that. How did I not think of that? But he's coming at it from, I guess, a different side of things, you know, where he's thinking, how will this translate to 200-300 people and a TV screen?
Absolutely. And the big thing to remember, none of this that I'm telling you is like a revelation that came to me at night or anything. I'm only relaying information that my quote-unquote wrestling dads taught me. So like a lot of time, like last night we did a seminar here in Adelaide, and a lot of the sayings that I had shared with the students was similar to the things that Al Snow had said when he had been here a year ago. Well, guess who one of my wrestling dads is? Al Snow. So that's where this stuff comes from. I was privileged enough that in those two developmental systems, getting to work with Robert Gibson or Jim Cornette or an Al Snow or Paul Heyman or, you know, countless other talents that I've been in the position to be either coached by or talked to, even down to the NXT FCW staff, guys like Bill DeMott, Norman Smiley, William Regal. All these people share with you bits and nuggets of information. Now, if you're smart, you shut your mouth and you listen to the information that they give you, and then you apply it in the future. Because guess what? They're going to see you again. This is a small business. A year from now, if William Regal tells me, hey, you should get new boots, and I see him a year from now and I don't have new boots on, how much more information is he going to give me? I've obviously failed at the very basic advice he gave me to begin with. So that's all this is sharing information. There are a lot of guys down here that have passion, and there are a lot of guys down here that have been wrestling for years. But I found a lot of people that have been wrestling for 15 years, but they have less than 1,000 matches. So the length of time that you are performing in this business is one barometer of your potential ability. But the actual atmosphere in which you're having these matches, and more importantly, the coaches behind the scenes who are dissecting and analyzing everything you do, that's what's going to take a talent to that next level. Now, I'm not claiming to be the reincarnation of Carl Gotch here and I'm going to, you know, take Australia by storm. Not at all. But what I am saying is that I'm a resource and I'm an individual has who has been where everybody here wants to go. I have experience of working on live television. I've worked for WWE, Ring of Honor, TNA and their developmental system. I've done over 400 episodes for Ohio Valley Wrestling. While you may not know me as an international star, there are a lot of people like me that went through that developmental system that have this skill set. Now, if WWE needed a 6-foot-tall Persian with long hair who spoke two languages, I'm sure they know who to call. But the nature of this business is that you can only control your personal appearance and your attitude. Everything else is a function of an opportunity that may or may not be presented to you at some point. And when that opportunity is presented to yourself, you better be able to capitalize. That's all I'm trying to do. I'm trying to maximize individuals here, for instance, like an Adam Brooks. The day that Adam Brooks gets put in front of WWE or Ring of Honor or Global Force Wrestling, for that matter, I want him to be as prepared as possible to succeed. Because, yeah, I'm the gatekeeper for Global Force Wrestling, but I'm not the guy who's going to hire you. Nor am I qualified to be that person. But if I can tell you, the office is looking for this, or you need to cut your promo like this, or you need to be able to hit a time cue on your promo, and he doesn't take that upon himself to learn those skills now that I've told him what they're looking for, then that's on him. Now, not to say that he's not doing that. Adam's a very astute individual. He wouldn't be traveling around Australia performing if he wasn't already. I'm just using him as an example because we already brought him up in conversation. I'm not burying you, Adam. Calm down, brother.
We all love you, Brooksy.
Yeah, so as a matter of fact, I'm going to see him tonight here at the RCW show in Adelaide, too. So I look forward to smacking him around. I won't even make him pay $5 at the merch stand. I'll just give it to him for free.
That's a freebie. And Kellyanne, that's a whole other podcast. We're going to leave that one alone.
I'm not into the violence against women, but, you know, if Kellyanne wants to try to give me her best hurricanrana, I don't have any problem slapping her around, too.
Oh, she's getting in there with Chris Basso tonight, so that'll be interesting. One-on-one, Kellyanne versus Chris Basso. Todd Eastman, keep your grubby hands out of it.
Let me just say also, too, that Kellyanne is the type of talent that stood out to me so much. I met her for the first time. I believe I met her a couple years ago on one of my previous tours here. But when I got here with the job of being Global Force Wrestling's talent scout, she, amongst all the other females that I have seen here, not to say that I haven't seen other promising females, but she is so fundamentally sound in every movement that she does. Her movements are crisp. Now, when I say this, I'm not one of these quote-unquote work rate guys. I think it's stupid because I hate when guys don't sell. If you get super kicked 3 times and then you're up and you're not selling that super kick, you, sir, are rotten. Yes. But when Kelly does anything, it looks good. It looks on purpose. Her game is polished. And I would chalk that up to her trainer, Carlo Cannon, because I actually went to Carlo's class at 36 years old. Those classes are a lot harder than they were when I was 25. Let me tell you that. I got blown up real good, and I'm not ashamed to admit it. But Kelly is so fundamentally sound. She is the type of talent that I feel like sets the bar here for all females in Australia. And that is exactly the type of talent that I am looking for. Now, if you, as a female talent, aren't at her level yet, that doesn't mean you won't be. You just got to put in the work. You know, wrestling is unique in that because of the worked nature of this business, people have a misrepresentation of what it takes to be successful. And to a large extent, WWE's hiring practices kind of mirrored that. 10 years ago, when I was in my quote-unquote hiring prime, they were very interested in people who didn't wrestle. They wanted underwear models and pro athletes and stuff like that.
I think the top 40 tough enough applicants, the majority of them are bodybuilders who haven't actually set foot near a wrestling ring before.
Now, the exception to that is my very best friend, Mike Hayes. He's had a lot of views. He was actually at Tough Enough. He quit on his own volition. Now, Michael Hayes is an Iraqi war veteran who lost his left leg in 2006. And he's paid his dues in life, but I saw firsthand this man pay his dues at Ohio Valley Wrestling. He is going to make so much money for WWE. It doesn't matter if he gets to the end of Tough Enough. Watch, go back and YouTube his segments. He is a baby face waiting to be a tag partner with a guy like John Cena. And don't take my word for it. Go back and watch it. He and I have probably 12 matches from OVW about 4 or 5 years ago. If you YouTube my name, Muhammad Ali Vaez, or Mike Hayes, I guarantee you they'll show up. And at the time that we were doing those matches, he had less than 6 months of experience in the business. So to show that he could do it then with one leg speaks volumes to this guy's character. And I guarantee you he will be a household name in 5 years. Guaranteed.
There's one to look out for.
Yeah,
definitely. Absolutely. Very cool. Now, we are going to have to wrap it up soon because we do actually have a seminar, a promo and a mic work seminar about to begin very soon. So we're going to have to wrap it up, but I just want to get some of the quick fire ones in here. Oh, geez, it's going to be hard to narrow down, but a favorite match of yours, one that stands out that you go, yep, I'm going to one day I'll show my grandkids or my kids that one.
My own match?
Yeah.
I have a couple. I just talked about Michael Hayes. Mike Hayes and I had a match in August of, I want to say, 2011, maybe 2012. He had been 6 months in the business. We sold out the Davis Arena, capacity of 400 people. To me, as arrogant as this sounds, I felt like it was one of my finest examples of storytelling. I worked 12 minutes with a guy who's physically limited but has all the heart and charisma in the world. I had a match on international pay-per-view with Hacksaw Jim Duggan. That, for me, was a huge thing because I watched Hacksaw as a child growing up. So for me, that was a sweet ability to check the box. Same with Sergeant Slaughter. You know, these legends from the 80s, when you get a chance to put on your boots and work with them, I'm reliving my childhood. Because as a 10-year-old kid, I never thought as a 33-year-old man I was going to wrestle Sergeant Slaughter in Poughkeepsie, New York. 23 years later. But it happened. So stuff like that. And then, you know, I so many matches, man. I've had over 2,000 matches at this point. Those are the two that I can point out to and say I would show my grandchildren that those matches. Yeah.
Very cool. Let's go dream match. Let's fantasy book here. You can not just for yourself, but anyone. So you can book the venue, the event, the match, and the stipulation. What's a battle that you want to see?
For me personally, I would book myself in Madison Square Garden against John Cena because he's the top guy in this business, and that means I'm going to get the most money.
That makes a lot of sense.
But if I could book any kind of fantasy thing, of course I'm going to use myself because I'm selfish. Man, I wish I could have worked with Ric Flair in his prime. If you watch my work, I don't think it takes a genius to see that my in-ring philosophy is heavily influenced by Ric Flair. He is just the man. You're not going to see me do moonsaults or super kicks. You didn't see him do them either. And he is an icon.
And I never get bored watching Ric Flair matches, and they are wrestling 101. And every time I'm not only entertained, but if he's on the heel side, I'm rooting for that baby face. And it can be a Nitro from 20 years ago, but it draws me in.
And the thing about Ric Flair too is that, he was phenomenal. But what made Ric truly stand out was the fact that he could have a good match with anybody. Now, when you're 6 foot tall and you're not all gassed up, you better have that ability to be a ring general. I can take any 7'2" former football playing goof and make him look like $1 million. That's how I got my job with Jeff. He saw me do that live in person 2 years ago. And that's when he approached me as a talent. He didn't know I was moving to Australia. So that's the talent scout thing came about after the fact. But I am such a fan of being able to take anybody, no matter what experience level they have, and working a match with them. That's how I, quote unquote, get my shit in. Is by making other people look good. And the more rotten they are, the more pride I take in it.
Let's go favorite. Oh, you mentioned Lil Wayne was one of your favorite rappers, but favorite band or favorite sort of album, if you like?
Oh, geez.
You can throw Lil Wayne in there.
Well, of course, Wayne. Weezy's going to get in there. Jay-Z, I was a huge fan of The Doors. Pantera, Disturbed. Not so much, kind of when they came out, I was really into them. Tool. I'm a huge fan of Tool. I like everything, man. I like rock and I like rap, so I'm kind of all over the place. As long as it's not country. Sorry, Jeff. As long as it's not country, you know, I like music, man, because, again, it's an artistic expression. So when I work out and when I'm driving in my car, I like to listen to rap. When I'm, you know, doing stuff around the house or I'm going to go deadlift, I like to listen to metal. It kind of just depends.
It's kind of I've noticed that, you know, at the RCW Academy, when it's mega weight session time, yeah, the metal is on high rotation down there.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's such high energy, and it pumps you up. And, you know, before matches, I like to listen to rap, but sometimes I like to listen to metal too. It kind of just depends on my mood, you know. That's the beauty of music.
That's it. I mean, hey, I'm an 80s tragic, so, you know, what we were hearing before, that song from Footloose, Bring It On, love that. Brad Smythe, very good choice with the entrance music. And one of my favourites here, favourite after-show meal, do you go for the junk food pig out afterwards and reward yourself, or is it not back into the chicken and broccoli sort of deal?
Well, I have a sweet tooth, that's for sure. But I... especially these days, I'm trying to be incredibly disciplined with what I eat. It is literally chicken or beef and broccoli with sweet potato and quinoa. I'm 36 years old now, so my days of being able to go and eat shit food are over. Now I can tell the next day. Once a week, I like to go, quote unquote, ham on ham. So I'll buy one of those 750 kilogram or gram, I should say, bags of I'll buy a 700.
Going ham.
I'll buy like an enormous bag of ham, and within 24 hours, I'll eat the whole thing for late night meal and then breakfast the next day. But I can immediately tell 6 hours later the sodium and how my skin starts to look blurry and how I retain water. So I've with my personal training background, and then obviously wrestling, you need a six pack and you need two bicep veins. I'm very cognizant of what I put into my mouth these days, just because, you know, when you're trying to make a living in this and you're wrestling on a global stage, again, what can you control? Your attitude and your personal appearance. So after Global Force Wrestling's second set of television tapings in August, I'll probably go have myself a nice Big Mac and a chocolate shake. But until then, I'm going to withhold as much as possible.
God, buddy, did you have to mention a Big Mac and a chocolate thick shake?
Well, you know, hey, I'm a heel, brother. I'm a heel.
These love handles are calling out for some Maccas now. Just quickly, I wanted to bring it up during our chat, because I know we have a lot of Ring of Honor fans that do listen to the show. Briefly, just talk about your time in ROH. Were you there for very long? Were you wrestling on shows regularly? What was the go there?
Not necessarily. I was a Jim Cornette guy. So the only reason I got an opportunity in Ring of Honor was because Jim took the reins there for a few years. And I got the opportunity to work several of their live events and several of their television tapings. 100% had to do with my connection to Jim Cornette in the OVW family. I was sent to a paid Ring of Honor tryout, I want to say, in August 2013. I felt like I did very well and represented myself very well, but a few days later, I went to Raw and SmackDown and ended up getting into a dialogue with WWE and going down to, at that time, FCW for a tryout and a job offer. So Ring of Honor was a short stop in my, I guess you could say, tenure. But I'm not a recognizable name from Ring of Honor. Like, I'm not the guy that went in there and had 25-minute match with Roderick Strong, for instance. I was a guy who was privileged to be there by virtue of being grandfathered in through one of my wrestling dads, and it was a great experience. You know, wrestling is the type of thing where it's flavors of ice cream. You may like chocolate, Josh. I like vanilla. She over there may like caramel. Doesn't mean we're wrong. I'm just saying, don't get offended. Maybe you like strawberry too. But
chocolate.
But the thing is Ring of Honor is a different flavor of ice cream than WWE, for instance, in sports entertainment, which is a different flavor of ice cream to, for instance, TNA. Or actually, a better example would be New Japan, where it's very stiff and strong style. And I don't think my talents necessarily worked best in a Ring of Honor setting. So it wasn't like it was a make or break type thing for me. I was grateful for the opportunity, but I'm more of a character and methodical working guy. And their business model seems to be more built on the acrobatics and what I like to call the stunt show. So I don't necessarily think I was a great fit for that company, but I was extremely thankful for the opportunity because I felt like I represented myself very well. And based on the feedback that I got, I think I did represent myself very well.
And quickly, I got to ask you, because you said, you know, Jim Cornette, one of your, I guess, wrestling dads, and he is a guy that, you know, I take in as much as I can from Jim Cornette, whether it's just podcasts, whether it's interviews, talking about the business, his kayfabe commentary shoot interviews, which are fantastic. He has copped a lot of flack from ROH fans back in the day with the way that he wanted to, I guess, bring it back to more of the old school mentality. What's your opinion quickly on that? Because I see exactly where he's coming from in his philosophy. If you don't need to take 1,000 bumps, if 5 are going to be able to tell the appropriate story and still get everybody over, and that obviously you said before, you know, the moonsaults and rah rah rah. It's you know, you sometimes don't need to do that stuff to actually get the end result. Do you think Jim copped unnecessary flack from the fans, especially?
100%. The one of the issues I think today in the wrestling business is that the wrestling fans think they're smarter than they are. And they don't understand the actual art form. Now, you are free to have your opinion and voice your opinion because you're buying a ticket. But don't for a second think that you are qualified to make decisions for a wrestling company. Jim's standpoint was this, and let me use a pop culture analogy. Have you seen the film Mad Max?
Yeah.
Okay, excellent. It is 2.5 hours of nothing but car crashes and nonsense action. Was there any character development or plot to that movie, roughly? Or was it just a stunt show? So, are you going to go and see that movie again in the theater? No. That's the point. There's nothing wrong with moonsaults. There's nothing wrong with super kicks. The problem is if that is your bread and butter and there's no coherent story behind it, you're going to kill yourself. Listen, the human body can only take so much punishment. Everybody has a bump card, and you don't know when your bump card is over until it's over. An example I'll give of this is Daniel Bryan. What a phenomenal worker he is. He earned his way to the top of this building, or excuse me, this business. How many? Yeah, well, that's my point. How many one-hour matches did he have at a high level in Ring of Honor in front of 300, 400, 500 fans to get the opportunity to get on top of the business? And then he got on top of the business, and what happened? His bump card caught up with him. Look, nobody knows if this is going to be your last match. Nobody knows when that bump card is up. Jim was of the opinion, and I share this opinion, that why would you take 5 bumps when you can take 1 and make that 1 bump mean more? It's, again, flavors of ice cream. I'm not right. They're not wrong. They're not wrong. I'm not wrong. It's just opinions. And the opinion is derived from the top down. So if that's Jim's philosophy and Jim wants to do this, the other aspect too is that so much goes on behind the scenes with professional wrestling that has nothing to do with Jim. So fans don't know who to blame, so they just blame the guy who everybody wants to blame. And I kind of feel like that's what happened with Jim. But again, that doesn't mean I don't still love my wrestling dad, despite, you know, what the internet quote-unquote community may think of him. You know, I don't give a shit what they think. You know, I respect the fact that they have an opinion, but they haven't been to Jim Cornette's house and had dinner. I have. They don't, you know, they haven't spent years training under him. I have. So I understand where he's coming from when he says these things.
I can only imagine what Stacey Cornette's cooking is like. It'd be amazing.
Oh, it's phenomenal. Phenomenal. Thank you, Stacey, for every time you cooked me food.
Oh, wow. Well, look, we are going to have to leave it here. But before we do let you go, just get all your plugs out of the way where people can find you on social media, all that sort of jazz. And I guess your next live appearances around Australia. This will be out Tuesday, so next weekend, I guess. Have we got any dates?
Well, you'll see me at quite a few wrestling shows around Australia, whether I'm booked or not, because of my responsibilities to Global Force Wrestling. After tonight, my next booking is on June 20th at the Ashwood Performing Arts Center in Melbourne for Outback Championship Wrestling. I again have another show with them on July 4th, I believe at a different venue. But you can follow me at Twitter at Ali_Vaez. At Twitter, just look up Muhammad Ali Vaez. I'm the only one in the world. You can also find me on Facebook under the same name and Instagram as well, but I'm not really super active on Instagram. And yeah, I have a YouTube channel with over 180 matches spanning back 10 years of my career. Again, Muhammad Ali Vaez. And yeah, and if you see me, say hello. I'm not as much of a heel as I portray, unless you're a goof, then I am.
Or you're Ian, and it's your birthday, and you're getting slapped.
Well, he set himself up. He put himself over that it was his birthday, so, you know, I had to slap him. This is supposed to be my podcast. This is my time on Josh's show, and you're trying to get yourself over and your birthday over. So, my friend, I'll even give you a discount. $4, and I'll give you a slap in the face.
Oh, that one was just for you, mate. Just for you, Ian Davis. Well, thank you very, very much for having a chat with us. And we will be back after this on Wrestle Radio Australia.
Hey guys, Jake here from the world's almost finest podcast, reminding you that the FNX Network is going to be taking part in this year's Indie PopCon at the Indianapolis Convention Center in Indianapolis, Indiana. The event takes place the weekend of June 26th through the 28th, and we're going to be there representing FNX along with the guys from Top 5 Geek, representatives of UWC Online, and more special guests who may be stopping by throughout the weekend. And on Saturday, the 27th, from 2 p.m. to 3 p.m., we will be actually be taking part in a one-hour live show on the podcast stage with Top 5 Geek and our special guest for the day, YouTube video game reviewer, The Completionist. We're going to be playing games, giving away free official FNX merchandise, and who knows what else. And there's so many celebrities that'll also be attending PopCon this year. I mean, guys like the voiceover extraordinaire Troy Baker, acting legend Edward James Olmos, Casper Van Dien from Starship Troopers, former WWE superstar The Masterpiece Chris Masters, and so many more. The FNX booth will be located at booth number 736 near the GameStop setup and the cosplay workshops. Visit IndiePopCon.com for a complete rundown of events and special guests. And you can always find us at FNX.network. The 2015 Indie PopCon, not your typical con experience.
That will do it for this episode of Wrestle Radio Australia. Massive thanks to our guest, Muhammad Ali Vaez. Top bloke, and yeah, hope to see him around a bit more down here in Adelaide. Folks in Victoria, you can see Muhammad Ali Vaez in action at Outback Championship Wrestling, and if you check out Channel 31's website, they actually have some of the recent episodes of OCW on there for you to check out. So if you're not actually in Victoria and you don't get to see it on television, you can catch up with the web stream. If you'd like to help out the show, the best way you can do that is by leaving us a rating and a review on iTunes or wherever you found the show. We really would appreciate that. That helps us get into more ears. You can follow us on Twitter at WrestleRadioAU. You can find myself at JoshJDArmour. We're on Facebook. Just search Wrestle Radio Australia. You'll find the page and the group where we'll be asking for your input before we have guests on the show. Now, in the next couple of weeks, we're probably going to have somebody on from Australian Wrestling All-Stars. They've got a big show happening August 1st in Adelaide. But until then, my name's Josh Armour, and this has been Australia's wrestling podcast, Wrestle Radio Australia. Thank you for listening.